fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. How are my loyal listeners? Thank you for your continued support. And as always, click that subscribe button, everybody. We had an amazing show for y'all, because born the mothership is Sean Kenny. You know him as Captain Pike and Lieutenant DePaul on Star Trek. He's now the author of Captain Pike Found Alive. Come on board as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Kenny. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing Stars podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here.
Oh, it's totally my pleasure, sir. It's an honor to speak with you as Star Trek royalty.
Thank you.
So, we start with a question of inspiration. So, what inspired you to become an actor, and who were your earliest influences?
My early influences was watching certain shows when I was younger, and sci-fi did hit me. It didn't hit me as much as just good action, okay? And when I was coming up on Star Trek as a genre, it was very, very early, and I didn't know that it was coming about, because when I was discovered for the role of Captain Pike, a woman came to the theater I was in, and I was acting in a part, and she asked me backstage, she says, well, I want to introduce you to a man that is currently working over at Paramount. And I said, oh, what's his name? And she said, oh, Gene Roddenberry. I said, I don't know who he is. And she says, oh, you will know who he is, but I want to get you over there because I think he might want to see you and meet you. Boom.
That is awesome. That is absolute. Did you know of Star Trek at all at the time, or?
No, negative. I did not know Star Trek at the time. It was just lost in space. You know, when I'd look at stuff and, oh, it's kid stuff. You know what I mean? Nobody thought that Star Trek was going to appeal to, I'll tell you a funny story about that too. Later when I was on the show and I was in the studio at a certain stage, and all of a sudden, Lucille Ball came in and she was talking to Billy, who was the customer. And she said, oh, Billy, I love what you're doing. Just keep the girls looking really good, really beautiful and everything. And all of a sudden she said, hey, yeah, and keep this up. And she did this, you know, with her hands. And I was behind a little kind of curtain there. And I said, I don't want to get involved, because it was just between her and Billy. And then later I heard that Ricky told her, she said, oh, I love Star Trek. It's a great comedy. And he says, sweetie, it's not a comedy. It is not a comedy. And that's a true story. She thought it was a comedy.
It's funny to think of Star Trek before people knew what Star Trek was, because it's like, especially like, even like my generation, everyone knows Star Trek. It's such an integral part of culture. It's intertwined with so much other aspects of our of life and society. That's weird to think of time when people are like, what, huh, what is this Star Trek thing you're talking about?
No, it's true. It's so true that people, when you'd ask them if they saw the show, they say, what show? And I said, Star Trek. Oh no, I don't know what that is. I mean, so many people. And I didn't realize that, even though I was recording it and I did like four episodes, a lot of people hadn't seen it at all at that time.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. It's funny that it took so long to catch on with audiences, and nowadays it's hard to imagine a time when there wasn't Star Trek on TV or in a movie. It's been a rare situation where it wasn't in one or the other.
No, you're exactly right, and a lot of people didn't know about it. I mean, I didn't know about it until I got on the set, and then I looked around and I thought, wow, you know, and here I am in a crazy makeup. They didn't know who I was. I mean, they thought I was some guy they pulled in that had a, yeah, I had a resemblance to Jeff Hunter, who was in the cage, but to know that the people behind me, you know, Doc and Jimmy, and, you know, they were behind me talking, they couldn't talk to me because I had my mouth taped down as Captain Pike, like this. And really? So it was really strange. You know, I was just like a silent observer, but it was good because I heard what they said, you know, certain things, shall I say, you know, that we're not good or whatever, they'd say, oh no, that's not right. Oh, the lighting's wrong there. Oh no, I hope they change that. But, and they were right behind me standing there. And, you know, when you're a young guy and you've never been on a real movie set and you're hearing these people talk about things, and after a while, you're part of the furniture, because I couldn't talk. So they didn't have a dialogue with me at all.
Well, the episode we're talking about is the is a two-part episode called The Menagerie, which was like an intercut show with The Cage, as that you mentioned with Jeffrey Hunter.
Yes.
In which you played the very well-known and respected Christopher Pike.
Correct.
Now, the interesting thing about the role, once again, you're in that chair, you had all that makeup on your face. What were you told about what they wanted you to do during these scenes?
Well, here's what I was told later. They picked me because Gene walked around me in the audition room. I went into his office, one little statue of the Enterprise, and his secretary came in and said, "Oh, Mr. Roddenberry will be in a minute." He walked in, he said, "Hi," and I stood up, shook his hand and everything, sat down, and he had a picture of Jeffrey Hunter in his hand. And he's walking around the room a little bit behind me, to the side of me, and then he came up to the front of me and he put the picture right under me and he said, "It's a match." And that was why I got the part. I looked so much like him, especially maybe the eyes and face shape, that he wanted me for that part. And that was, you know, when you're young and you admit it, he said, "Are you allergic to this and allergic to that? Or do you mind having a face mask on you? Because we're going to put a plaster Paris mask on you to form a mask so the makeup person could work on this while you're away." And I said, "Oh, no, I have no problems with that." When you're young and you're like that, you have to admit to everything is okay. Everything's okay. "Oh, you're going to fall off a building into a bunch of pillows. Is that okay?" "Oh, no, that's fine. I can fall off a building," you know, whatever. I mean, actors do that because they don't want to lose the part.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. So when you were, you know, told what your role was going to be, when you put in the makeup, you put in the chair, did you think this is the most absolute crazy thing? Because like I said, you got all that, like the horrible scarring, then they stuck you in that chair. You must have thought this was the weirdest thing you've ever had to do.
Yes, it was. It was probably the craziest thing. And I had been in theater and I'd done a couple of characters where I'd go off stage and come back as an older character. So I understood what they were doing. But I didn't understand the not speaking, meaning I'm saying, "Well, wait a minute. Well, is this the most important?" "Yes, it's the most important character. But he's supposed to be so crippled that he can't talk. So this is why we're inventing this beeper." And they showed it to me in the chair. And what I had to do is I kept it down with my thumb like this, okay? And then they said, when you have to say yes or no, just let your finger go. One is yes. Two is no. And that's how it was done. Everybody thought that was done with recording.
Yeah.
No, I had to do it physically.
That's weird. I always thought that was remote. Like when I thought about, I guess maybe I'm thinking about too much like current film, but I always thought that was a remote thing. Stuff. Right.
No, not remote. It's it's like when they show me the people from the Cage. Though I don't know if you know this, but the women that were playing the Talosians, they had those veins in their heads. They had the same thing I had. They would push them in and out. And so the veins would pop in and out, in and out. So if you look at that, the Cage, that was so creative, whoever invented that, that you could make the veins in the head move from you. Mm. And I mean, those are things that, like you said, were not of this age. They were like 20 to 30 years earlier.
So when you're sitting there as Christopher Pike, you had to hold a very specific expression. You had to hold a very kind of facial expression. Was that hard after a while? I mean, how did you manage to keep hold that for probably would have been hours?
What it was is they only filmed me for a few minutes. They understood that I was in a very captive situation. They had my eyes taped down. They had my mouth taped down. In fact, they said, "How are you as far as being any problem with diabetes or whatever?" And they said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, we're going to be able to feed you. You know, you're going to be on the set maybe 8 to 10 hours, and we're going to be able to feed you through a straw." I went, "Gulp." And they said, "Yeah, well, it'll be nutritional, but you cannot be able to chew." Okay.
That's
so
horrible.
So, you know, like, hey, man, when you're in, you know, you're a young guy and you're saying, "This is pretty, pretty amazing what I'm doing here. It must be pretty important." And sure enough, I was able to eat. I lost about maybe 10 pounds that week, 8 to 10 pounds, because here it was 5 days. I think we went 7 days. We went five, and then they had the pickup shot. So they said, come on back in. The weirdest thing that happened to me is they dyed my hair white. Okay. And then they said that we're going to take a screen test. They took a screen test and they said, your hair is too white. We're gonna do it. I think they used the word beige. We're gonna use a beige color dye that makes your hair not so white because you're standing out. So, and then they did that. And then they said, we want you back after I did the show. They said, we want you back in another part. And I said, what? Yeah, we're gonna make you the first helmsman on the ship. Man, I said, Gene said that. He said, I want this guy back. He's so good, blah, blah, blah. He told them. And sure enough, they dyed my hair black. Darker, you know, I'm dark brown. So I'll make this brief. Then my hair started to fall out like in clumps like this. I could pull them out like hundreds of hair. And they sent me to a woman at Paramount that said, I can stop that. And I said, what do you mean? Well, Jean Harlow had the same problem. I worked on her. Now you imagine how old this lady was, right?
Yeah.
And she says, you got to use Firmadil. And I said, what's Firmadil? She says, it's from Europe. And she took a vial out and she broke it. It was glass. And she put it in my hair and my hair felt like spaghetti. She said, you will never lose any more hair.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I have my hair at 80, man. It's here.
Oh my God. That's
I know.
Crazy.
Yeah, I just gave a great ad for Firmadil. It's hard to find it. But anyway, that was a really good experience in that show and in that group of people that they were so knowledgeable. They were so knowledgeable in what they were doing.
Mm.
You know? The network didn't get how intricate it was.
Well, when you're, I mean, you're locked, as you say, locked in the chair, you got the makeup, you got the, your eyes are taped, your mouth is taped. I mean, is there a claustrophobia that sinks in or?
No, I think he asked me that. He says, you're not claustrophobic because he knew they were going to make a face mask for me. So they put plaster of Paris. I don't know if you know that when I said it, they put plaster Paris all over you. They want a face mask so that when you're away, they can work on your face, but they put two hoses in your nostrils. And a lot of people would not be able to take that because the face starts to freeze up, you know, it's plaster Paris. And then they kind of squeeze it on the side and pull it off. But that takes an hour. So a lot of people who are a little paranoid, and I'm not, man, I'm ex-military. I knew what I had to do. You know, it's like taking orders in the military like I was. And by the way, he asked me about that. Were you in the military? And I said, yeah, I was 5 years in the Air Force. He said, yeah. I'm Air Force, I'm Army Air Force. And I said, cool. And I said, where were you? And I said, I was in Naha, Okinawa. And he says, I bombed that base because I was in a Japanese base.
That's awesome.
In 1962, all right? And so he and I had a, you know, kind of a cool, you know, he liked people that were theater trained. He asked me how, I'm getting off the track about the makeup thing, but he said, are you theater trained? I said, yeah, they found me in a theater for you. And I said, okay. He says, how many? And I said, I did 4 plays in the last 2 years. And he said, yeah. I said, because I don't hire anybody that's not theater trained. Isn't that interesting? Mm. So all the actors that you saw in TOS, which is the original series, they were all theater trained. He would not hire an acting only film actor. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That he was, a lot of these little things you don't know. And he said to me, he said, because theater trained people can do anything. I mean, if you put them out there in the rain, they'll stay out there. They'll do this. Or you know, you have something on stage where you have to do and you have to go and repeat it 6 times, 7 times. But film people, they get arrogant. And it was true, you know, because being in the theater, I learned a lot. And so he knew that.
Mm.
But getting back to that facial thing, that was a biggie. And so when I came off the set, listen to this one. I thought they'd take, you know, the makeup off like a mask and put it to the side. They tore the whole thing off and threw it in the trash.
Oh, no.
And they said, every day for 10 days, we will have to do your makeup. Okay, here's a killer. I said, okay. You know, like I said, you agree to everything when you're that young. And they said, we have one thing to request. that you don't, how did he say it? He said, you don't alter your face in any way. Like, don't go and put too much shaving cream on. Don't do this and that. Because once we take it off, your skin might get very red. Just put this stuff on. Give me some stuff that, you know, because it's spirit gum. It's spirit gum underneath the, you know, and they did it inch by inch. I don't know if you know this. When they put that face on, they do an inch with a hairspray. With a hair dryer. Then they do another inch with a hair dryer. Can you imagine? It takes an hour and a half to do the makeup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. An hour and a half. And then they tear it away at the end. They don't put it anywhere. You got to do it the same day. Here's the funniest thing that happened. The last day after 10 days, we're sitting there and I'm tired. Everybody's tired. They're punchy as hell. And sure enough, they put everything on me and they put the scar. Here's how the scar happened. This is amazing. One day, the first day that we were taking screen tests, they put a scar on me. They painted it on. It was purplish and everything on my right side, I believe it was. And they had me look to the camera and then they put the lights on. 5Ks. 5Ks were like, not like now. Now they're digital lights, right? These were hot lights like this. All of a sudden, the makeup started to bleed down my face. And I'll never forget the makeup artist, Freddie Field. He says, oh my God, Gene is going to be so pissed off. He said, I thought that if I put the scar on, it would be okay. It's bleeding. It's all over his shirt and everything. What do we do? And then the kid, I'll never forget him. He was a young makeup artist. He says, hey, what about this? He put his leg up on the table, man, and he drew a dog leg on his jeans. He said, how about if we cut this out and put it on his face and tape it on? He said, that's brilliant. That is so brilliant. He goes like that. He says, so Ray Sebastian was his name. I hope he's still alive. So they taped it on, okay? And it worked. They put on the hot lights. It never bled because it was just, you know, little stuff on the side of it to make you look at it on the show. You'll see what I'm talking about. So on the 10th to 12th day, we were so tired. I come up to this point for a reason. We were so tired. And I'm looking in the mirror like this. They're putting it on me. And it's the last day. And Ray's so happy. And everybody's so happy it's going to be over. And then they're about to roll me out of the room. And I said, stop. And they said, what's up, Chuck? I said, you got the scar on the wrong side. Oh, God. They go, oh, God, man. Oh, no. We would have been fired because it's $10,000 a minute.
Yeah.
And they couldn't flip me, you know, because it was all. So that's the craziness about makeup.
That's funny. That's awesome.
No, it's really crazy, you know.
But I mean, the experience sounds like so amazing. But there would be not many people, I think, who would want to endure all that, the makeup and stuff in the chair the way you did for, you said, 10 days.
Yeah, and that's why he rewarded me. I thought it was over. I was ending. I was going away. I was going to leave that night. Everything was cool. And he said, Mr. Kenny, he said, Kenny, come on over. See, like military guys, we go by our last names. So he didn't say, Sean, come over here. He said, Kenny, come over here. And he says, I'm writing a part for you to be the helmsman on the ship. I said, what? He says, yes, I want you here as the helmsman. And you'll be on the next 2 episodes at least. I went, well, that was my reward. So then I'm back for Arena, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm back for Taste of Armageddon as Lieutenant DePaul, the helmsman on the ship, because George is over here on my other side.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he just liked what I did so much. And then here's the kicker on that one. About 15, 20 years later, I'm at a Star Trek convention. I'm sitting behind my thing and a guy comes up in a wheelchair like this, okay? And he looks over at me, he says, I'm Gene's writing partner. And I said, oh yeah, okay, hi. And he introduced himself, I forget his name, I have his name. And his daughter was with him. And he said, if we didn't find you, you know, we weren't gonna get a second season. I said, what? Excuse me, sir? He says, we had to find you because Paramount called us and said, you have a pilot in the lab, in the vault that costs $5 million, $4 million at the time. It was a lot of money at that time to do the cage, okay? And he says, if we didn't find you and we didn't get to use that episode of The Cage, they weren't going to renew our contract.
Holy crap.
Bob, yeah, I forget his last name. Bob Justman, he came up to my table and he looked at me. And Felix, you know, Felix, the little small guy who was in, he was in The Cage, Felix. And Felix looks over at him, he looks at me and he says, hey, Sean, this is something. And then all of a sudden he turned around and his daughter pushed his wheelchair away and he died 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Robert Justman, brilliant guy. He helped Gene create the whole second season and into the third. I think they did three seasons, but they only did 78 episodes. They made an exception that if, you know, you had to have 100 episodes to go into world distribution, and Star Trek was the only series they ever okayed it to go into world distribution at 78 episodes, because that's all we did. And that's a true story.
That's awesome. I mean, it's great that you got to hear that right before the guy passed away.
I know. I mean, 2 weeks later, because his daughter kept in touch with us, and she called one day and she said, Bob, really loved meeting you, and I'm sorry my dad passed away this week. And I was very sad. I said, he must have been a wonderful man. He had to be, because the way he came up to me and told me that.
So, it's amazing the experience you were able to have. You worked on the sets with like Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner.
Exactly.
What was that experience like on set? Those obviously became massive icons.
Here's the thing about Leonard. My mother and Leonard's mother were friends. We came from the same hometown, which is Mattapan, Massachusetts. Okay. And I was in the chair. I was on the set the second time. And I turned around to him and he walked over to me and he had his arm behind his back, you know, character-wise. And I said, oh, Leonard, hi, I'm Sean Kenny. And, you know, I could talk and everything. And I said, my mom and your mom, they shop together down in Mattapan. And he said, oh, really? Very, very interesting. And he walked away. And that's method acting. But it was so interesting that Leonard did that. I said, wow, he is Spock. He's totally Spock.
Yeah.
You know, to keep that energy. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
So
I mean, was he that way on the entire time on set? Was he always in character?
No, he was. He would not smile a lot. Because it's very hard when you're a method actor method acting tells you, you are this and you are nothing else. Mm. You are this, you are nothing else. And if you study method acting, it's so tough for a lot of people. I mean, I remember the story about Brando and The Godfather. He wanted to be in pain and everything, so he stuck a needle in his leg. That's what a friend told me.
Really?
So he could look very painful as The Godfather. And certain actors do things like that with method acting. Pacino did it in certain ways. I would read about how he'd have to get really mad, so he'd go somewhere where he'd have to be, you know, really upset. Then they'd say, okay, come on in, Al. He'd come in and he'd keep that energy going. And it's not the way. I studied Meisner. Sandy Meisner was one of the greatest acting coaches ever. And Meisner doesn't do that. Meisner does it a whole different way. I don't want to get into that. But now Pacino and all these other guys that were into method, they use Meisner. Sandy Meisner was a genius. He says, you don't have to do all that stuff. Anyway.
That's awesome. I mean, I find that interesting that what was William Shatner like on set?
Ah, man. I think all about himself.
Really?
Yeah. And people say that today, you know, that, and I could tell with Doc and Jimmy saying, oh, he's stealing our light. They were standing behind me. They said, look at him. He's got the gaffer stealing our light. Come on, let's go over there. They went over and they said the light's all, you know, on him. And we're kind of in the shade a little bit, you know, on the set.
Yeah.
And they said, no, they talked to the gaffer. That's the lighting guy. And they say, no, bring it up more on us. Boom. Those guys, they didn't fool around. Yeah, they didn't let him get very far.
But like I said, that's definitely the stories around Shatner, that he was almost tyrannical on set about his own image.
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't see it as much, even though I did four episodes. I know he didn't like me standing up as I was Lieutenant DePaul, because I'm 6 feet tall and he's about 5'7", 5'8". So he told the AD, he went with his finger like this when I stood up to do something, to walk, maybe a walk around the set, I had to deliver something to somebody else in the show. He said, no, put him down like this with his finger.
What the hell?
Yeah, if I was standing near him, he moved me very far away.
Really? Well, that's kind of petty.
Yeah, I would say that. I don't know, I asked my wife, what's the name of a person that is that into themselves, honey? She there's a term for it.
Narcissist?
Narcissist, thank you. And he was very narcissistic. Now, here's the thing. For his character, he almost had to be that way.
Mm.
He almost had to be that way, because when you looked at Kirk as Shatner portrayed him, he was so, you know, so physical and so like me, I'm in charge here and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't like that with Jeffrey Hunter. Jeffrey Hunter was a dramatic actor. You see what I'm saying? And even though probably Gene couldn't get Shatner at first, he got him after Jeff left the show. Jeff didn't want anything to do with it. His wife said, you're a movie star. It didn't work. You're not going to do another pilot. Boom, boom. And so Jeff, boom, left.
I mean, but playing Pike, you're part of that massive legacy. You have, obviously, Jeffrey Hunter. Now it's been revamped with Anson Mount. This is an amazing legacy that you're a part of. I can't remember the name of the guy from the movies who played Pike. Can't remember what the guy got, that guy's name was.
Which guy? The one that played what?
The one who played Pike in the two Star Trek movies in 2009 and 2012.
I never met those guys, but I remember those two guys did, you know, they did those two characters for film.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something, that Anson Mount is a great guy.
Yeah.
And he and I have kept in touch, and I saw him at the other show, and I don't know if this will come up on the show, but here he is. I don't know if you can see it.
Can't quite see it, but I can see the outlines. The faces are blurred out.
Oh, there you go. That's you and I.
Yeah.
At the convention.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And you remember he played on Hell on Wheels.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he's a great guy, man. I mean, if this show is going to take off even more, I think it's going to be Anson. Because he has the essence, as we used to say, as an actor. He has the essence of getting that character down. And you can just see it in his eyes. You can see it in his face. Some of the actors don't telegraph a lot through their face without seeming too theatrical. Mm. But Anson, I watched a little bit of Hell on Wheels. He had a beard and he had long hair like this. And I'm saying, hey, who is this guy? I never knew him then, you know? And I said, this guy's, he's got to go to something else. Sure enough, Star Trek.
I mean, is it weird to think that the character of Pike and you specifically would be so remembered for these roles? I mean, we're talking, God, it's been 60 years almost, and people still, you know, want to know about you and talk to you. And you're, is that a weird thing, considering, like I said, it was a 10 day shot?
Yeah, it was. It was very strange for years that I kept having it come back. Oh, they want you over here, or they want you to go here. And I'm saying, they still like, you know, the Star Trek characters. And sure enough, and this last one, it was just wild, because Anson was there and I was there. And people would come to me and they want a picture with me and Anson. And I had one. And yeah, they said, oh, we're going to go to Anson and get him to sign it. Well, we get the two Pikes. So that was pretty cool.
What did he say when he found out that you were when you were there as one of the prior Pikes?
He and I hit it off really well. He said you had to put up with all that makeup, and I said yeah. And he says yeah. I said, I hope I don't have to do that. But now he realizes that in one of the shows coming up in Strange New Worlds, he's going to have to be in the wheelchair. He's going to to be with the makeup like I had on, because that is one of the results of the, you can't get away from that in the scripts.
Right.
He does have that accident, with the young people, and it blows him away. And so he didn't ask me about that, but he just said that he said, you established the character, even though you couldn't speak, he said. And I looked at that and he said, I realized what I'm going to have to do. And he got that across to me.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I like that he recognized the importance of that.
Yeah, he did. He said that, you know, and there were two other actors that did the movie Pikes, you know, I forget their names. But anyway, this thing is Strange New Worlds. I got to give it credit. When I looked at it, a couple of episodes, I thought, you know what? They're going back to TOS. That's what we call it as actors, the original series. We know that whoever does establish the same energy field that Gene Roddenberry started out with, which was TOS, it's going to hit, because there's still people around to say, oh my God, this feels like the original show.
I will say, as someone, I mean, I'm a Star Trek fan, and I would say Strange New Worlds, me and my wife watch it. It really is a phenomenal series. I had the pleasure of interviewing a few of the people from the show, and it's amazing just because it does feel like the original. The actors, you know, they're fantastic actors, they're good people. I really feel like that's been the best Star Trek since Deep Space Nine.
Good. I'm with you, buddy. I really liked it. I saw just two episodes and I thought, wow, this has got the same feeling. Yeah. It's about feeling, about watching something, you know?
And I would say Anson Mount, he does a wonderful job. I mean, he does come off as one of the most likable captains there's been. Once again, you have, I mean, everyone loves Shiner, everyone loves Picard, but you know, I mean, he's definitely one of the best since probably, once again, I would say Sisko.
Yep. Yeah, he is. It's a great, how shall I say, heritage. He's inherited.
Well, you wrote a fantastic autobiography. You were called Captain Pike Found Alive.
Yes.
Which gave you the opportunity to reflect upon your time in Star Trek, not only as Pike, but also as T'Pol, as you mentioned, being on the helm of Star Trek.
Right.
What insights did you get by just reflecting upon it? Did things change in how you thought about it now that you've had time to really reflect?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. In the reflection, which took years of before I wrote it, I would have people come up to me, and they were in the show with me, and I would say, "Oh my God, I remember when we were together." So after so many years, I forget when I wrote the book, maybe 10 years ago, and I would say to myself, I got to put this on something that I can have if my kid wants to know what it was like and everything. All of a sudden, my wonderful wife, she said, write it all down. We'll edit it. We'll put it out as a book, Captain Pike Found Alive. And sure enough, when it came out, it got 5 stars. And I'm going, what? And I mean, because of her, I mean, she's just so incredible with the way she edits and everything. Because Gary Lockwood and I talked a while back, and he wrote a book. It's way up there. It's like 800 pages. I don't know, you know, because Gary Lockwood sold the show, you know, with Where No Man Has Gone Before. And so it's the editing and the precise making people hit a point and go to another chapter and another chapter. And that's why, you know, not to brag about my book, but I think that's why I got the 5 stars, because it's, you know, it's under 200 pages, but that's what I could say about my time on that show. But what you asked me about was very interesting. In reflecting on it, I would have to think about things that I never thought about before. And then I had pictures in there of actors at shows that, you know, that I hadn't seen in a few years. And I said, I'm going to put their picture in the show, in the book. And I started to put pictures in the book. And then all of a sudden, you know, that reflects, it says in the opening chapter, it says sometimes a book or a memory is like a painting on the wall that the sun is on it. And when the sun goes onto the painting, it starts to drain the colors in the painting. And I use that as an analogy of how your mind, you know, I'm 80 years old now. And so your mind can all of a sudden dwindle, the thoughts dwindle. So write them down. And so I did make notes, and that was 10 years ago. And that was important. I did that.
Now, in reading the book, what do you want your readers to learn from the experience of reading your book?
If a young actor wants to know what Hollywood is like, that book is so important for them. Or if you want to get into acting, yes, read my book, because it tells you a lot of the forays and the things that happen. If you want to be a Star Trek aficionado, I think I've put a lot in there that a lot of people didn't know. Mm. And other than that, I think it's enjoyable. It's my life as an actor. And I always say to people, I say, hey, I hope you enjoy this book about a Hollywood actor with a crazy time that he had, you know, and that's how I, you know, signature my book to people, because I don't jump around as much as people thought I would do. I stay with how it came to me, how this happened, how that happened. And all of a sudden this happened and then this happened. And then I do a retrospect on what I realized after doing all that for 27 years.
Now for our listeners, so they know, you can obviously buy the book on Amazon, but you can also get it on your website. So can you plug your website for them?
Yes. It's StarTrekActors.com. If they buy the book there or any of the pictures, I'll sign every one of them, you know, anything for them. And that's the best way, I think, to get it, StarTrekActors.com.
Now, the cool thing about your website, because I got to check it out, you have, like I said, you have autographs for sale. At a good price. You have the book. You have notifications of your upcoming conventions on there as well.
That's correct.
About page. What else can they get from your website?
Well, there's pictures on there. There's some of the pictures that have never been seen from the set. And I was so fortunate that a person came to me one day and he had taken these pictures on the set. And some of them are from the actual photographers on the set. And they're beautiful pictures. I mean, the one of Nichelle with us all there in the background. And Nichelle, and I saw her just before she passed away. What a beautiful woman. I went to Italy 2 years ago. They asked me to come over there. And then all of a sudden, a picture shows up on the Italian group of people. And they said, Mr. Canny, we got this picture and there was of you and you look like you're in control of the set of the ship. And there's Nichelle behind you and all this and all that. And I said, I never saw this picture before. You'll see it on the menu there. And I swear, it's just so wonderful to see that they had a picture, the Italians. The Italians are so into Star Trek. It's amazing. I mean, they flew me over to Italy, just me and Taki. And it was just the best time. I mean, they even got up on stage. One guy played the Gorn. Here, it's all in Italian, right? And they did this fight like the Gorn. The guy gets knocked down on stage. And I'm saying, these Italians are really into Star Trek. It's just amazing.
That is absolutely awesome.
Yeah. And so anyway, that's on there on the store. You can go on, you'll see that picture with Nichelle. And what's so funny about that is a lot of people say, oh, I know, when the guy came over to me and gave me the picture in Italy, he says, oh, Mr. Kenny, you see, who's not in this picture? And I said, Captain Kirk, that is good. You didn't want to see this picture. We like this picture because you look like you're in control of the ship.
That's awesome.
That's the Italian for you, man. They don't move around.
They got good taste, right? They prefer you than the narcissist Shatner.
Yeah, they thought I was going to run the ship after that. That is so funny, man.
That is awesome. And like I said, it must be awesome to be at all these conventions and really getting a sense of what the fans feel about you. Yep. And like I said, thinking about Star Trek fans, we never forget. Like no matter what you do, we will always remember and always revere you. And there's such a family feel, and there's so much passion within the fan base. It must be amazing to just be enveloped in all that at a convention.
Exactly right. You hit it right on the head, man. I loved it at the convention. And we had 14,000 people, like I told you, show up in Las Vegas. That was amazing.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome.
Yep.
Now you're also in a recent film called Staycation, is that correct? As Staycation, Edward Bellows.
Yes. That is a very, how should I say, the guy, Russ Emanuel, who directed it and produced it and wrote it, he had a premonition about that something was going to come on like this, you know, an epidemic. And I think he wrote it about 2 years ago. So when he came on to it and showed it to us, it was just beginning. The whole thing with the virus, what it's called, was just coming on. How incredibly futuristic was he to think that I'm going to write this thing about a pandemic, you know? And so, and Olivia DeBow and I are in it. You know, she was in Star Trek. She was the first Q. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't.
No, she was the first Q. Olivia DeBow, you can look her up. And she was on Next Gen. She's a beautiful woman. And so she comes on and we're doing a like a talk show, you know?
Yeah.
And they're asking me because I'm like a Dr. Fauci. And I'm trying to, you know, say, well, it's, you know, it's not as bad as you think, but you should get vaccinated, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I don't want to spoil it. No, I could tell you the ending and I don't want to do that. That's not good. But I'm telling you, it is a very, it's a very neat movie they made.
So what interested you in getting the role? Was it because you knew the concept? Was it more of the character?
Yeah, I liked the character. And I liked the way he presented it to me. And he asked me, he asked me to do another movie, which was before that, which was, it was about a woman that becomes it's called The Assassin's Apprentice. Look that up, The Assassin's Apprentice. I'm playing a guy that's explaining to her about the weapons used, like James Bond's guy would explain, oh, this car shoots machine guns out of the headlights. And it is a really good movie. So that's another movie. I'm plugging that movie, plus I'm plugging Staycation. It's the same director.
Mm.
But he came out with that, you know, The Assassin's Apprentice. So I did two movies last year. So it was great, you know? And so, it was the same director.
So is Staycation available now or is it coming out?
It's coming out and it's going to be in the theaters.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah, that's what's amazing about it because it's about the epidemics and things that went on, you know, and I don't want to tell the ending of it because it's really important to see it. Russ didn't think that, and all of a sudden the theaters say we want it. I think it'll be out November, just probably before the holidays.
Oh, okay. In
the theaters, Staycation. Yeah.
That's absolutely awesome. So it's like we know it's wide release on in November.
I don't know it yet, but he will, you know, tell me. He'll tell me, and I'll tell you. I'll send it over to you so you can send it out to the fans.
Yeah,
people will like it. Oh, I think Robert Picardo's in it as well.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of people in. I know Robert Picardo is playing a secret agent. He's playing an assassin in a way in. The other one, which is the Assassin's Apprentice, because she, the girl that's in that one, was a stunt woman. So they used her because she could do these incredible stunts. And that movie is going to be out. And I think they're going to go with theater with that one because a lot of people didn't work in film during that time. But for some reason, Russ was able to get all of us together and say, no, we're going to shoot it. We're going to shoot this. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. And he had the money people behind him, which was wonderful.
That sounds awesome. So yeah, when it's definitely ready to come out, you gotta let me know, and okay. I will remember to update the notes on the YouTube and website.
Okay, wonderful, my friend.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy. You've been awesome to talk with. It's great to talk to. Go ahead.
I want one. This is the most important thing that happened to me when I was doing the show with Spock.
Okay.
And I was in the wheelchair. He came over to me. And I found this a couple of years ago, but it's a Christmas ornament. And he said these lines to me, and they wanted me to cry, and I could cry because that's why Gene said in the part, you're going to have to cry. And I said, I can cry. And they said, okay, we hope so. And they didn't have to blow all that stuff into your eyes and everything. But I want to give you this sound, if you can do it. Here it is.
You know why I've come, Captain? It's only 6 days away at maximum warp, and I have it well planned.
No.
That's awesome. Wow, where did you get that? I never knew that was a thing.
That you can get them in there. They destroyed the mold, but this is from Hallmark.
Oh, that is awesome.
I know. I wanted to end it with that because I love Roddenberry's conception of that character. It was just brilliant the way he did it.
I really now you got me wishing they actually had more of those for sale.
yeah, they're up there. You find them. Okay.
That is awesome. Mr. Kennedy, you are awesome, and thank you so much for everything.
Thank you for having me. Stay well. Okay. All right.